Welcome to episode 295 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by my turkey in crime, J-Trip. Come on, John.
Gobble, gobble.
Yes, thank you. Wow, right on cue. I didn't even have to ask you for that. You just,
I'm so thankful for your terrible jokes that I can predict them seconds ahead of time.
Wow, man, thanks a lot. So, welcome everybody to another exciting edition of the show. We got a lot of things to talk about today, and now that we do this show, and used to do the show on Fridays, but now that we do it on Wednesdays for the past few years at least, this has kind of become an annual tradition of sorts, doing a show right before Thanksgiving. So I've got a couple things I'll say what I'm thankful for later on in the show. John, I did. Other than my jokes, I'm sure you're thankful for other things in life.
And
actually put a question out there on Twitter, what people asking them, what are they thankful for as it relates to open source? And I had a lot of great responses to that, which
sure
we'll cover later in the show. Let's start off with our first story, and it's actually a bug. Now, if you installed WordPress 4.9, which hopefully you have by now, you may have noticed an issue with page templates. In fact, WordPress 4.9 added a bug, which was more or less unintended consequences of trying to fix something else, where if you create a or update custom page templates, you know, whether in a parent or child theme, you wouldn't see those in the list when you're like assigning a page template to a page. Or a post, I guess it could work either or. In fact, it was it's because of caching. So there's new caching that was added, and there's a lot of developers who are like scratching their heads, ripping their hair out, trying to figure out what was going on here. And Weston Reuter actually explained that it's due to changes in the file editor, where he says in previous version of WordPress, files would only be listed two levels deep, but in 4.9, the entire directory tree for a theme is now listed regardless of depth. Recursively gathering a list of files can be expensive for large themes, so that is why caching was enabled. And an unintended side effect of the caching is that the same directory listing function, get files, is used both for the theme editor and for gathering page templates. So with that caching, I think it was in a transient. If you would wait for an hour, the transient would clear, and then your page templates would show up. But for a lot of developers, who experienced this issue, or even like as an end user, if you're creating a new page template and it wouldn't show up, I could see how you'd just go crazy trying to figure it out. So they're working on trying to figure this out here, and it looks like it's going to be fixed hopefully in WordPress 4.9.1, which should be out, who knows, within the next few days, maybe within the next few weeks, or probably after the holiday. What will we have? WordCamp US, we got Thanksgiving, so somewhere within the next few weeks. However, there is a plugin available within the track ticket, and I'll have it linked in the show notes. It's called WP Clear File Cache. You can probably search for it on the WordPress.org plugin. Well, it's on GitHub, so I'll have a link to that in the show notes. But it actually clears the cache for you. It's like a button, so you just push it, clears the cache, and you're able to see your page templates immediately. So that's kind of a workaround for now until they actually fix it in core.
It's kind of a bummer that this happened this way. Like, caching isn't easy, but this is one of those, like, is really the problem that it solved. It's nice to have that problem solved, like being able to put your page templates in any directory, any level of directories deep is really useful depending on how you, as a theme author, choose to keep your files organized within your theme. But caching is like, it's not super easy to nail down as a developer where a cache needs to get invalidated. I think knowing that it was a 1 hour transient kind of, maybe it's, to me, it seems unfinished. Because I would want to make sure that the caches are invalidated every time a theme gets changed or the theme is edited or a theme is deleted or something in the customizer or whatever. Like, there are all these little places where this cache should be invalidated. The reason it even exists in the first place is because calls to the server file system are expensive. And so going out and getting it every single time and walking the file system looking for page templates is costly. And so why do it if we don't have to do it every single time? It just is, it kind of is a bad deal that the bug is there in the first place, because it is a pretty commonly, not only like used feature in WordPress, but like people bend the crap out of it. Like they use page templates to do crazy stuff. I use page templates to do crazy stuff. I am one of the people that run into this as a problem. So I get why this is frustrating, but with the, you're right though, that with the holidays and WordCamp US, that a 4.9.1 is probably not like, it's not even really, yeah, it's not even days away. It's a while before this is going to get fixed publicly. So it's nice that someone jumped in to make a workaround.
And I'll probably have a post written up about this specific issue just because of the fact that there is a plugin available that could, it's a workaround that can help people out right now. And because of the fact that 4.9.1, as we said, may not be available for some time. No, within probably not within at least the next couple of weeks. And some of the feedback on here, John, I don't know if you read through the ticket, but
I did.
Some of the feedback from people was like, how could this happen? How could a change like this that's not documented or change this functionality occur in WordPress? Isn't there any quality assurance? How could users not know that this was happening? What's going on here? well, the typical feedback.
That feedback will always happen. There will be more and more of that feedback with every feature that goes in. Every little change is going to have some, and especially if it breaks something, nobody complains until it's broken. And then everyone, you know, goes, oh, hop, 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 hop. And again, I am one of those people. When something breaks, I usually, you know, I eject to Twitter and have some probably
ambiguous complaint. Is anger. That's the first thing I feel when something breaks.
Yeah, but like you expect that, I guess, like with, I expect it less from open source, and my expectations are higher from companies. Like when something is broken on my Mac, like how is the most profitable company in the US with tens of thousands of employees, how can they also still not fix what I feel like are pretty obvious flaws? So, but my frustration with open source is like, well, of course, like no one's gotten around to this yet, or no one's getting paid to work on this stuff. And so I don't get mad about open source stuff. I try to pull up my sleeves and dig, jump in and see what I can do to help. But like some of the ideas, like looking at the track ticket. And so I know for listeners, this is kind of out of context, but some people even suggested like, well, if WP debug is set, or if you're in development mode in your WordPress installation, that maybe that piece of caching should be turned off. But that doesn't really help the problem for users. And then it doesn't actually address the problem, like the flaw in the code as it's coded like today. And so Dion, DD32 has a similar comment where he says, well, he thinks it's a bad idea just because it's a cache issue and it's not really related to debugging anything. So that with that, I kind of agree. But this is one of those things that should be easily cached, and then the cache here should be easily broken, because the only time you need to bust this cache is when a plugin is activated or deactivated, a theme is changed, or a theme is actually edited, which we have control over, like the file editor for the most part. And then we have timestamps on the files themselves, and we can check if those timestamps changed. So I don't think that a fix for this is going to end up being as complicated as maybe everyone thinks that it is. But we'll see.
By the way, the other fix too, one of the suggestions that first came out was just bumping the theme version. That too would bust the cache.
I say, yep, that's a good workaround if you're working. And I guess like we've got themes and parent themes and child themes and all sorts of places where these are coming from. So there's a lot of files that need to be checked and looked at, but this is not the first time that someone has needed to solve this problem. So I have a feeling this will be easier than everybody thinks.
So one of the, as it relates to e-commerce, WooCommerce has taken a look at the possibilities of its software platform and how Gutenberg sort of fits into the role of allowing customers to edit and manage products in a block-based system, a block-based editor. So they released a this sort of animated GIF that shows sort of a pre-filled template where you could add a list of products, like a little gallery, and then you can add, use sliders to change the different number of products in there. So you could have like four products in a row or eight products. And basically, they're just sort of experimenting right now. And the WooCommerce development team admitted that they are not quite sure exactly how Gutenberg and the role it's going to have and how people manage their products or even create them. So we're looking at things like, do certain things need to actually be in a block? Or let's say you just want to update your a price for a product. Do you have to go through a block in order to make, a relatively simple change like that? And just some of the overall aspects of creating these products. And some people go ahead.
Yeah, like any good technology, like any cool new user-facing feature, people are going to abuse it, and it will be used for everything, and that won't work. But people will get a taste for it, and then people will complain that nothing has blocks. And then over the next 5 years, we will settle into what the meaty middle of blocks is, I think. And so it's nice that the folks over on the WooCommerce team are putting out these little thought processes, because it paves the way for what other innovators could be or should maybe be doing. I mean, the folks that are working on WooCommerce are like the best and brightest and smartest open source software, e-commerce developers, designers, UX engineers, and everything that there are. And so for them to be hinting at what they're thinking about is a gift to everyone else and what direction that they should probably be going, because this makes perfect sense for the way that these blocks should work. The thing that I'm curious about is how baked into WooCommerce that this example of blocks will be, or how theme dependent are these blocks? Because where is the divide between this being a functional thing or this being a presentational thing? And
it's funny you mentioned that, because automatic designer developer James Koster says that users don't always need visual editing experiences. And he says that how we present data-driven editing alongside the Gutenberg experience will ultimately determine the success of the project from a WooCommerce perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And like with, we've sort of pie in the sky idea these for the BBs too. And on it's not as, there's not as much to customize like this. I think there's so much that goes into the social side of how people interact with a website, that could you imagine trying to use Gutenberg to stylize your comments? Like, it doesn't, like, how do your comments look and work? Where do you want the avatar? Where do you want the time? Whatever. It's like nobody, we're not really there yet with the conversational aspect of it, but their example of using 3 columns worth of products or 4 columns worth of products or how many rows worth of products is kind of a brilliantly simple example of how simple that this could be to customize it, but also how complex the direction could go. Because there's a lot of logic that users get for free by having this built in. Like trying to decide if you want 4 columns or 3 columns or 4 rows, like going into somebody's documentation, finding the short code, looking at the attributes, typing them incorrectly, going into post content, copying, pasting that in, going back to the theme, seeing if the theme was correct, going back and editing the post because it doesn't look right. Like, this removes that entire hassle, and it provides a little bit more confidence in the process. So this is a big deal, bigger deal than I think they have let on that it is.
Yeah, so we'll have to see how it works out at some point in the future between WooCommerce and Gutenberg. If you use the Taylor Page Builder plugin, there's bad news, but there's a hint of good news. So the bad news is that the plugin is being discontinued, and the owners are citing funding, Gutenberg, and competition as the primary reasons for disbanding the plugin. Let's see. Taylor is the is actually one of the three page builder plugins that Pippin recommended back in his article in September of 2016. He covered all these page builders in this massive article, and he looked at them and covered them with various features and theme, content lock-in, and how they worked with that. And he came out with those three recommendations: Taylor, Poodle, and Beaver Builder. And Taylor actually came under new management in July 2017 after the original developer no longer had enough time to dedicate to the project. He's Worsfold sold it to Enclavely, whose owners were early and enthusiastic users of the plugin, so they actually were pretty excited about it. But a couple months later, the new owner cited the cost of keeping up with Gutenberg and other competitors as the primary reason for discontinuing its development. So as a quote here from a great article that Sarah Gooding wrote on the Tavern, they say that Gutenberg is going to be bundled with WordPress itself, and that's definitely going to give a tough time to all third-party page builders, and even that is not the case. There's some really big players around like Elementor, Divi, Beaver Builder. Those three are probably the top three right now in the market. Mm-hmm. And others, which are going to be hard for us to compete with, being a completely free project and providing almost all the great features in the free version. So the main reason for us to discontinue Taylor is due to finances, which Taylor needs to keep on its development and marketing to compete with all the big players, and especially Gutenberg. So at last check, Taylor had 3,000 active installs. Some of the users are pretty sad about this news. However, the plugin is still available for free on WordPress.org. It could be forked. And it looks like the bit of good news here is it looks like it may be transferred to a party who is interested in keeping up on its development. And even if there is nothing official, people could always fork it and maintain it that way as well.
We talked about it a little bit, maybe on Twitter, I think. But this is the right move for a lot of people, I think, that are in
this. How many page builders do you think are going to go this way and just say, well, you know, we already have our established players. Yep. We have Gutenberg that's going to be built into core. Does it make financial sense for me to continue, you know, thinking that you're going to be one of those big players in the market?
The answer for most people is no, I think. Like, that's the honest answer is this isn't like, you know, you have a band and then your neighbors, they have a band also, and now you have two garage bands. It's not like you're competing with one another anymore. You're literally competing with the only band that anyone listens to, right? Like, when every WordPress comes with a block-based editor in it, your block-based editor, this isn't even like a David and Goliath kind of problem. This is like this is more like good ideas come and then Apple turns them into like a core feature in macOS or iOS. Like Flux is a good example. I know you use Flux to like dim down your display or make it yellow instead of blue at night. And so that's just built into macOS now. And so the team of engineers that worked on Flux for 10 years before it was baked into macOS or iOS, they didn't get acqui-hired by Apple. Apple just took a great idea and implemented it. And so Flux is still an app and it is still an option and there are still people behind it, but a huge segment of their market pretty much got cut off, and they can choose to add little better features or to hedge a little bit of performance or value or features above and beyond what maybe Apple's willing to do with macOS. But for most people that are in that situation, the smart move is to pivot and work on the thing that you know that you are really super good at. And for most people, I don't think that's a block-based page builder like this.
And Worsfold said that he has mixed feelings about the whole situation. He says, ultimately, I see Gutenberg doing most of what page builders currently do, but in a better, more standardized way. And hopefully whatever's left, whether that's custom blocks, styles, functionality, will build on the framework and serve to reduce the amount of fragmentation in the ecosystem.
And that's the thing about this is for the ones that are really good, it's kind of too bad. Like if Taylor was still a passion project and not a for-profit like loss for an organization or for a group of people, then Taylor could continue to live on and get and evolve and change and be alive and keep the 3,000 users it has, or maybe look for a few more to try and put their little flavor on what a block-based editor looks like. It reminds me a lot of the folks at PageLines. I don't think we've ever talked about PageLines, but they were like the original super old school WordPress like site builder, page builder, block-based thing. They even had BB Press support back in the day.
Even back in the day, you had Headway. Headway made a big...
Headway too, yep.
Made its stand on being a visual sort of site builder.
And the PageLines folks say that they have their whole... I'm looking at their website now. See, I mean, what do I know? But they say that they've got their platform is powering 112,000 websites for a thing that has nothing really to do with Gutenberg at all and is a completely different type of take on what a page editor kind of looks like. But between Taylor and between Conductor, right, from Matt Report, Matt, and a bunch of others, there are some really good ideas that could get baked into Gutenberg.
Let me put you on the hot seat. Are you familiar with how these major players work? Beaver Builder. Have you used any of them? Beaver Builder Divi? Okay, so let me put you on the hot seat. You're the you're the head honcho there of this project. You've got this massive following. What you've got is, you know, by all accounts, successful. You have a lot of users that do things your way, the environment that you've set up. You see Gutenberg as, you know, to continue your business, to make sure that Gutenberg either A, doesn't take a huge chunk out of your business, or B, I mean, what do you do? Do you change your product to complement Gutenberg, or do you stay in the path that you're on because so many people enjoy everything you're already offering?
I think it depends on size. It depends on the size of who you are. For someone with 3,000 users, you haven't hopefully you've known over the course of however many months or years if 3,000 or 300,000 is the mark, whether or not you've gained or lost momentum. I have plenty of plugins that I think are good, but that I don't advertise. I don't really talk about, and so nobody uses them. But like Beaver Builder has 400,000 installs and probably more if we count sites that don't ping back to WordPress.org that still rely on the Beaver Builder's functionality. So the folks at Beaver Builder they already have probably been working on solving this problem. And my idea for this, and I think we've talked about it on the show before, is the folks at Ionic that built, I think it's called Stitch. I want to look it up because I think I've probably, I don't want to misquote it, but
I've actually read some feedback from some of the popular page building plugins out there, and they say they're actually excited.
Yeah,
to see what Gutenberg brings to the table and how they can sort of build on top of what Gutenberg already do. I mean, Gutenberg is going to, as Wartfold said, is sort of standardize this nature of page building and visual site building, and hopefully many of these other page builders could just build on top of that as a framework.
Yep, and that's what should ultimately happen. Like, so some of the folks that built Ionic, I think, and I should know more about this, but they saw so many different front end frameworks being used between Angular, Vue, and everything else that they developed middleware to handle the front end juggle and whatever process that they were using so that it would work with Ionic framework or Cordova or some of the others for building mobile apps. And so imagine a world where there is this engine block middleware, there is this block engine framework that says, okay, well, it doesn't matter if you're using Beaver Builder or Divi or Taylor or Conductor or any of these things, we will transpile magically all of your blocks to work and come back down into being Guten blocks. Like, if there was a way for all of them to still be Gutenberg compatible, then This is an opportunity for folks like Beaver Builder to 100% embrace it, double down on supporting it, and then turn all of their blocks into Guten blocks and then just put their shiny chrome on top of it. I mean, that's literally how companies like Apple have made a living, or Ford or Chevy or Honda, or most of them take off the shelf parts from third party vendors that they don't have any responsibility for. And they compile them together with a little bit of design, and then they call it theirs. Like, Honda doesn't make their own wheels or spark plugs or headlights. They all come from Enki or third-party distributors or manufacturers. They just happen to make it look the way that they want it to look, and then people buy it for thousands of dollars. So I think that's the exact same opportunity that reputable page builder companies have presented to them, and the smart ones will jump on it.
So that's something we're going to keep an eye on, is how the page builder market evolves with Gutenberg on the horizon. So WordCamp Europe, hey, that's a conference you're not going to be going to, at least not yet. But the 2018 speaker applications are now open for WordCamp Europe. They've actually made a call for speakers. They'll be accepting applications between now and January 15th. They're actually looking for developer-oriented talks based on a user survey. 54% of folks who attended the event identified as developers are looking for more developer-oriented content. Now, in 2017, the event received a total of 235 speaker applications, and 43 were selected for the main event. Wow. Looks like they're going to stick with the format for 40-minute talks, so 30 minutes plus 10 minutes of Q&A, as well as 10-minute lightning talks. And this year, the event's actually going to experiment with hosting community workshops. So they plan to have a separate call out for workshop leaders next week. So I know that you haven't bought your early bird ticket yet. And something I've seen you talk about on Twitter a little bit is sending in these speaker proposals, things that you would want to talk about. So if you were going to go, if you're going to speak at WordCamp Europe 2018, give me a couple ideas of your speaker proposals.
So I just submitted a proposal for LoopComp.
Talk about developer-oriented conference.
Yeah, and last year I've been fortunate enough to speak at LoopComp for both years. And last year I didn't do a super technical talk. I kind of did a philosophical talk about the Unix philosophies as they apply to WordPress development. And there was a lot of good feedback about that, but it's been a long time since I've really done a really super deep technical talk. And so the talk that I submitted to LoopConf this year was a very technical talk. And so I won't let the cat out of that specific bag, but if I was going to give a talk about WordCamp at WordCamp Europe, I have another thing in the works that is really technical, that is a WordPress plugin that I would want to talk about, that I think has lots of cool little nuggets that I haven't seen a whole lot of people try to do or pull off inside of WordPress, not in a while. So I would want to talk about the secret project. The little secret project will be out by WordCamp Europe, so it won't be a secret then, but I can't really talk about it yet. But I would want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk to the media. do you think I run or I contribute to a WordPress media organization? I'm not going to tell anybody.
When there is someone to tell, you will be the first person. You will be the first person, aside from my wife. You will be like the first. Well, you'll be like the 13th person to know, but you'll be the first person to like publicly know.
You know what they call that? Co-host with benefits. All right. So, okay. Don't make me uncomfortable. I'm supposed to make you uncomfortable. Early bird tickets are on sale for WordCamp Europe. There's still 680 available. So if you plan on going to WordCamp Europe, which is going to be out in Belgrade, Serbia, an awesome place, be sure to pick up your ticket.
I am more excited about just going to Belgrade than I am about
I've heard it's a beautiful city from Vladimir Prilovac. He speaks very highly of it. In fact, that's where Managed WP was born, out in Belgrade, Serbia.
Yep, I'm super excited. And because it's more affordable than Paris was last year, I have a feeling that they will probably have an immense amount of interest in speaker proposals and attendees from all around the world. So I'm really super excited for WordCamp Europe this year.
So GitHub has launched a security alerts for JavaScript and Ruby projects with plans to add support for Python coming later in 2018. GitHub launched this dependency graph feature that tracks a repository's dependencies and sub-dependencies under the Insights tab. And earlier this week, the company wrote out an expansion of this feature. It will identify known vulnerabilities and send notifications with suggested fixes from the GitHub community. So the dependency graph security alerts, they're automatically enabled for public repos, provided the repo owner has defined the dependencies in one of the supported manifest file types. It actually uses data from the National Vulnerability Database to alert repository owners about publicly disclosed vulnerabilities that have CVE IDs. And as we said before, vulnerability detection is currently limited to JavaScript and Ruby projects, but Python support's coming later next year. Sounds like a good thing to have.
Here's my favorite part about GitHub rolling this out. Okay. It's not that it's cool, because it is cool, and it's not that it the team at GitHub did a good job with their release post, with how the feature works, with integrating it on the web, all that stuff. Like, it has nothing to do with the things that I think everyone expects for it to be cool about. It's that this is like the first real true dip into machine learning where code can be smart enough to know that the code around it is bad. And now we as developers and users get to intervene because the code has told us that the code around it is bad. So it seems really simple, and I'm going to elaborate because it doesn't make any sense. But the fact that
you're going science fiction on me
a little bit, because the fact that GitHub can see the dependency tree, and I get that, like, this comes with a JavaScript and Python, even most PHP applications that aren't WordPress have Composer, so there is possibility for a dependency graph there too. But the fact that they have built software to sniff out and look for problems in all of the branches in these dependency trees and go, oh, hey, you just happen to be using this one little thing over here is a problem, and you now, ping, you need to do something about that potential problem that's been discovered, is really the first time that for us as developers, that the most important part of our jobs, the security side of it, has gotten enough attention where a cool feature has been, and a very, very technically challenging feature has been deployed to us. And so that's what I think makes it cool, is that behind the scenes, my guess is that the folks at GitHub probably did an insane amount of work to make this feature look and feel simple and easy. And so that's why this is cool. It's not because the feature is cool, but because the team at GitHub had to go through and do an insane amount of machine learning type work to make sure that the code was autonomously smart enough to alert you that something that you have used down the line is maybe bad for you. It's like if your food could alert you that there was a problem in one of the marshmallows in your Lucky Charms. Like, it's amazing. Like, I don't know. It's incredibly cool.
So if we look at something like this, what do you think are the implications or the possibilities of, you know, if GitHub can do this, you know, would it possible to see something similar at some point on WordPress.org, you know, scanning the PHP code and JavaScript code that's in all these plugins?
It will happen. But it will be a long time before that happens. Yeah. So the reason I say that is, like, for a really long time, most developers were writing code like PHP code or web code without, they were just writing it without PHP even available to help them with linting or the syntax highlighting. Okay. But like modern software development tools will tell you that a variable is used incorrectly or that it should be a string and it's an integer or all the simple stuff, but also like if functions are being used incorrectly or you're using them wrong, like the code and it is interpreted live. So it will tell you that you're making a mistake as you type code. And so knowing that we can interpret these things live means we kind of are at a point where that computational processing is available to us. It wasn't always available to us. Certain pieces of software, Eclipse as an IDE and the fork NetBeans that I use, have had a lot of this stuff baked in for a really long time. PHP Storm has a lot of it too. But Moore's law of how all this computing works sort of means that it won't be long, maybe 10 years or so, as long as the web doesn't, as long as net neutrality doesn't go to crap and, you know, all that. Yeah. But eventually, we might end up in a place where every single page load on the web automatically runs unit tests all the time because the processing power will be so cheap and because the quality of the application matters so much that there's no reason why we couldn't have that level of testing and test coverage in everything and integrated so smoothly. It'll just take a long time for everyone to get to a point where that's something that they are willing to invest their time and energy into and where they'll really truly understand the benefits of having all of the cross checks done all the time. Like for every time you add, you subtract and confirm the answer. Like if every time you serve a web page, that web page has confirmed that the page it's giving you is 100% valid and correct. It'll take a long time to get there, but it won't surprise me. We'll get there. It'll happen. It'll have to happen. But it'll be a while.
So tomorrow here in the U.S. is Thanksgiving, and I'm not eating turkey, and I'm not eating ham. Take a guess as to what I'm eating. Actually, boy, you could. Okay, you know what? I just thought of so many answers that are bad for the show. I'm just gonna say we're making duck. We're actually gonna have duck last year, and we've had it in the freezer all year. And well, we gotta eat duck, so we're gonna eat duck because actually, we bought a. We have a company here, Honey Baked Ham Company. And they do awesome hams, and they're smoked turkey with the same glaze. And so we bought two of those. So we've been eating those. Because we have the duck. So we'll do some duck tomorrow. But what do you say thanks? You want to give thanks?
Yeah. How did you decide on duck? Was I not listening? What was
Last year we're going to do a deep fried duck, you know, in a deep fryer, but we did turkey instead. So the duck just sat in the freezer for a year and now we're going to eat it. So we were supposed to eat it last year, but now we're going to eat it this year.
Easy. Yeah, this year Carrie and I are going to her mom's side and then we're for like a late lunch, and then we're gonna hang out with some friends and play board games Thursday night. So it should be like a good time. Should be very low key and super fun.
So I put the question out there on Twitter. I asked, "What are some things you're thankful for related to open source?" And Bob Dunn says he's thankful for many things in the WordPress space, and right now he's thankful to some incredible people in the WordPress community who are helping him to get to WordCamp US. So that was pretty cool. I think he was asking for $1,600, and in no time flat, he's got $1,600. So he'll be at WordCamp US. If you see him, please stop and say hi. Very cool guy.
I like Mika's answer, the freedom to do what I want with it. That was one of my favorites because the freedom aspect of it in general is one of my personal favorites also. So the freedom to do what I want with it was one of my favorites I saw.
Yeah, and Amanda Rush says that the fact that free as in freedom software even exists. Even Matt Mullowick's sister chimed in on this. She says the friends that I've made over the years and the opportunity to see them occasionally.
I think I sat next to Charlene at the WordCamp US at Matt's State of the Word last year. And I only get to see her during like the WordCamp US. Otherwise, I really don't see her anymore. So it's
nice. I had a chance to to me and talk with her at length and learn some wonderful things about Matt's childhood that we won't go on the show with. But I have information now, intel that may come in handy, you know, later on. I'm just kidding. But she's a great person. She's a great person to hug, and she's filled with love, and she's a jokester. Great person to know.
It may come in handy next week when Matt's on the show.
Right. Which, by the way, yes, we do have him scheduled to be on the show next week, but schedules are iffy, so hopefully he'll be on the show. He'll give us
Philip Arthur Moore's answer was one of my favorites also. I'll read his. The power it gives me as a minority to be seen as my code and not as my race or religion. Pull request themes and plugins are my identity and our world, and the opportunities for a fantastic life are boundless. I can relate with that one. I mean, that's part of what I really appreciated about working on the web was I was able to let my effort and my work and my communication and everything mean more than someone else's version of what they thought that I was or was supposed to be. So his was one of my favorite answers too.
Jenny Wong says a career in multiple communities. David Bissett says the community. Rebecca Gill says the people, they stole her heart. So we'll give that back to you. Michael Nelson says low barrier to entry, e.g. example, no NDA required to access or contribute, and in WordPress's case, relatively easy to learn. We have another one here. More technology sharing in the PHP ecosystem. It allows me to work from home and contribute to a project and community that powers millions of websites globally. And Jamie O says, imagine a delicious and not unreasonably sized piece of pie you will be serving for dessert. I'm thankful that open source accepts contributions in increments smaller than said piece of pie with tools and items that support remote work by default. And those are some of the things that people are thankful for as it relates to open source.
So it's largely the people, like the community, Morton, David, I mean, a bunch of people mentioned the community, Bob, everyone else, and freedom.
Well, right? I mean, in Matt's state of the word, when he would share details from the user survey, you know, there's always that question on there, what do you enjoy or like most about WordPress? And for so many years in a row, it's always the community that leads that spot. Mm-hmm. And probably for good reason. So just a couple of things I'm thankful for. Thankful for WordPress. Thankful for the living it's afforded me, some of the people I've been able to meet that I otherwise wouldn't have. And there's also other things about WordPress. I was thinking about this the other day that due to my interactions with WordPress and I'm more aware now of things like gender neutralizing things and not always saying he and not always saying she and how you say certain things and how you address people and the cultural issues and the gender issues and being a female in tech and how difficult that is for so many females out there. And there are all these other issues that I've really become super aware with thanks to WordPress and the community that, you know, kind of in many ways have really nothing to do with code. It's the you know, sort of outside issues that are sort of just as important as the software project itself. So I'm thankful to be exposed to those to sort of broaden my horizons a bit. Thankful, of course, for my wife. I'm thankful for great health coverage, as I found out. I found out just how good it is. Thankful for just having another day here to live on this planet. Which by many accounts, I don't know, you know, might not be around for much longer if Trump passes away, but I'll just leave it at that. What are you thankful for?
Goodness. I mean, where do I start?
Thankful for Penny. Thankful for Paul.
Well, it's true. Thankful for the puppies. Right. I mean, on the personal side of it, I feel like I'm immensely thankful for a understanding and patient partner. I have two very cute and good dogs that are very patient and tolerant and smart and loving and cute and all those things. And have a good group of very close friends and and have a lot of fun together and good times and all that. So, but I think I, on the WordPress side of being thankful, I'm largely thankful that
to be my co-host. Oh, that's so yes, nice of you, John. That's
exactly what I was going to say. I'm really thankful that as a community, but not just as a community, but as a collection of individuals and companies and small companies, big companies, agencies, products, all the, we are a very diverse group of people, talent pool wise, culture wise, background wise, and that largely we all get along okay, that we are free to move between companies or positions without there really being broken hearts or people mad about switching or moving, and that we are able to have a largely civilized discourse on Twitter or track or in comments or on our blogs, and that isn't necessarily how the rest of the world has worked or seems to work lately. And so for a group of people to come together organically online to help build and enjoy and appreciate a piece of software, I think that I am largely thankful that everybody is pretty cool with one another almost all the time. It could be like a million billion times worse. And so I'm thankful that we have an emphasis on that, on like being friendly and inviting and welcoming and encouraging and compassionate to one another. New team members, new contributors, people from different countries, language barriers, code quality, everything, right? There are all these things that we could choose to be frustrated by or choose to get in the way or compartmentalize or partition us, but instead we've largely gotten stronger and better as the culmination of all of our parts. So that I think is the thing that I'm the most thankful for. And
you know what else I'm thankful for? Hashtag WP drama. No, I'm only kidding.
Because it gives you something to do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Give me those page views, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, and that's even the thing, even the periods of time where there has been any public facing hashtag WP drama, it's bound to happen. Not everyone is going to buddy up with everyone else. There will be collisions. And how gracefully that we choose to degrade from those collisions is ultimately reflective of who we are as people and also reflective of the community and the software project as a whole. And so there will be outbursts in times where people disagree or people don't misunderstand one another, or with either no bad intentions or just unintentionally offending other people or someone, we're able to largely, we don't fall flat on our face. We usually gracefully somersault our way out of these things and move on to solving the bigger and better problems to solve than the kerfluffles that come up with one another. So
I just love that. Say that word again, kerfluffle.
Kerfluffles.
Ah, wow. That's such a graceful word. The way you say that is so elegant. So there you have it, folks. That's what we're thankful for. By the way, if you want to let us know what you're thankful for, send me an email, jeffc@wptavern.com. Let me know you heard it on the show and give us a hint. Let me know what you're thankful for this holiday season as it relates to
us. You know what else I'm thankful for? And I will say this to you on the spot. I am thankful for all of the work that you put into the commentary that goes into the WP Tavern. Because It is not
what
easy. It is not easy. It is not an easy role that you play in what is largely the one of the more trafficked and more popular WordPress news blogs that allows comments, that is a community that has frequent return visitors coming back to it. And so having to hit approve and having to look at some of the comments that come in is not easy. And it is
a lot of spam too lately.
It's been a lot of spam too. But I am thankful that you persevere and that you and Sarah both, but that y'all continue to allow comments and to foster that type of discussion there, because to me, that's always been what has made the tavern a great outlet, is the conversation, even if it's not always healthy or good, or, you know, has a reputation for being whatever it has a reputation for being. I appreciate it, because if it wasn't there, it would be someplace else. But also, I think you do a good job of keeping a level head about all of it. So I'm thankful for that, too.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Oh, God, I'm blushing. Man, all this mushy-mushy stuff. I wonder if our listeners are, like, you know, embracing this.
I'm not sure what's grown three times.
This is not a – by the way, folks, this is all legit. This isn't a bromance, so
don't get your maybe it is a little bit. I just want to keep saying kerfluffle because I know that you like it.
Let's get to our picks of the week, because you have a good one. I have a good one. You may have not have heard it. Now, my pick is called Trigger Happy. I kind of cringe at saying the name of this plugin, because I know for some people it might trigger happy is some connotation with guns or whatever. But it's a plugin. It's a new plugin. It's a visual scripting tool for WordPress, which allows you to connect plugins and events together using a simple user interface. So if you know what if this, then that is, where if this happens, then do this, it's kind of like that, but built into WordPress. So right now, the plugin currently supports core WordPress functionality, WooCommerce, and NinjaForms. So as an example, you can send an email when an event occurs, such as a user registration, or you can create a post from the front end using WP Forms, calculate discounts or fees on WooCommerce orders. After people submit a contact form submission, you can redirect them to a URL. You can base this on if they're logged in, logged out. I mean, there's so many different triggers and actions and things you can do. Now, I will say that I did try this on a I love poopy.life. I've mentioned them before on the show, and it's there it is. Yes, I did it. I found a way to get you on the left because he loves that. But it's my way of quickly getting a fresh WordPress install up and running on a practically a live environment on a server. So I installed the plugin there and I was testing it, and I encountered some issues. I couldn't get it to quite work as well as I was expecting. So I have notified the plugin author and let them know of some of the issues I have, but I still wanted to mention it because I think it's a really cool idea. And the developer plans on adding support for other popular plugins as well. So instead, it doesn't 100% replace writing code for actions and filters and hooks and doing things of that nature. But it is pretty cool in what you are able to do with it. It kind of provides a UI for all those actions and filters and bridging core WordPress functionality with popular plugins, and sort of the sky's the limit, you know, in terms of the possibilities and the combinations you can create. And one of the other cool things I like about this is it calls it flow. So it's like a flow editor. So the flow starts with a trigger and then there's an action. So I kind of like the way you ordered that as well.
I'm a little surprised that they went the route of supporting specific plugins first. Like it says, currently supports core WordPress functionality plus WooCommerce and NinjaForms. And right. So maybe I'm, you know, providing free unsolicited advice. But if I was going to build something like this, I would have probably built it like there are enough little filters in WordPress core with the options API, with posts, with comments, with users, with metadata, where you could kind of just hook this into the individual little keys that everything is saving. But maybe that's too technical. Maybe they're trying to partner. Usually this kind of partnership happens later. Like you partner up with the Gravity Forms to say, well, we're going to explicitly support you folks and help us build integration with what it is exactly that you want. But you could build something pretty cool that would be a little bit more developer-ish, but or geared more towards developers. But I like the potential that this has here. It's like Zapier, but
built into WordPress. His idea was creating supporting other popular plugins as extensions to this. So you have the core functionality here, and then if you wanted support for another major plugin that's out there, he'd build support for that, and then you have to install that little add-on, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure that you have access to those features or actions or filters, whatnot. I guess there are different ways to do this. I just thought it was really cool. It's like a built-in IFTTT. Just the idea itself was one of the first times I've seen it implemented kind of in WordPress itself. So
it reminds me of the original, what was it called? Micho built one of the original A-B test plugins for Squisk.
I remember that.
It reminds me a little bit of that where, you're doing something really neat.
He the same gentleman who had this idea or as a plugin like webhooks? I think webhooks was the big thing.
Yep, that's exactly right. Trying to find it now, which is never good to do on the air. But he,
I remember him mentioning how important webhooks were. They were sort of like the future of the web.
Gosh, I haven't thought about that in a long time. It reminds me a little bit of that though. I think that there's a lot of potential here. We should check back in with them in a couple of months and see where they are.
And what do you have for your pick of the week, sir?
My pick of the week was gifted to me, actually, but it's a good one. There's Jason Cosper, who's at Liquid Web these days, previously of WP Engine fame. Has something on GitHub called Big Dummy. And he just pushed this less than 24 hours ago. So this is a new pick, but it's brilliant. So I'll read the description because there are so many uses for it. It says the project is for folks who need to emulate an established blog with plenty of content while doing WordPress benchmarking and performance testing. There are 2,495 posts, 6,000 some odd comments, 200 tags, 26 categories, 10 pages worth of WordPress dummy data, ready to import. There are 1.6 gigabytes of images from Unsplash attached to posts. And everyone should be using something like this if you're testing any piece of code or plugin or shipping a product or anything like that. So if there are a few...
It's a good way to test scale.
Oh, gosh. There are a few dummy data plugins that I've seen. Images in the media gallery are always tough. But when there are... I used to use BBPress as my example, and it's still a good one. Where you end up with hundreds of thousands of posts. I think even WooCommerce is starting to be, and EDD is starting to be better examples of people that do have lots of products, lots of permutations of products, variations using taxonomies, metadata. There is just a complex arrangement of things going on. And so to know exactly what that is going to look like is really important. And so this helps people do that. And since it is, it does fall right in line with my technical type of tools, Transient Manager and user switching and all the ones I've had in the past have all been pretty technical. So this is no different. So my, I'm happy to have found this pick of the week, because this is this should be, I think, right up most people's alleys. So it's good that he.
Yeah, I believe in the description, he recommends to importing everything except the media to avoid timeouts. That's a big issue with importing data into WordPress. And in fact, he even provides access to all the files, so you can actually just drag them over manually if you wanted to. Makes things a lot easier.
Unless what you're building is an importer, then this is it's nice to have this kind of thing. And recent emphasis on the folks at EDD have some batch processing now. I know Norcross has worked on something. BB Press has had a batch importer for forum software for since 8 years now. So having this much data and moving it around really, really super, super helpful. And
I wonder, speaking of importers, I wonder what the status is, or Ryan McHugh, who did a lot of work in the WordPress REST API, he was kind of doing it on the side. He was sort of reworking the WordPress importer. And some of the screenshots I saw of the processing and the way it looked, I mean, it looked really good, like leaps and bounds better than what we currently have in WordPress. And I think it's just one of the projects that kind of either fell by the wayside or lost interest in. But you know, the WordPress importer, I think it could use some work.
You know? Well, it's old now.
Yeah, it's old.
And it was brilliant for what it was back in the day. I mean, it really was the tool. It was the thing.
It was the official bridge between WordPress.com and WordPress.org.
Yep. And it was amazing to have that built right in. So I think the last time anybody brought it up to Ryan, he basically said there's nothing in the way and it's not delayed. It's just he's got so many other things that are higher priority that he just hasn't worked on the importer in a while. So, Ryan,
like recreating track,
which is amazing.
Yeah, you already did that pick though.
Which is amazing.
Anywho, there you go. Big Dummy, great name for it too. Dummy content, big WordPress, great for testing, scaling, and other things like that. You know, I might install that just to read the comments, see what kind of comments he used on this site. No, that'd be kind of interesting. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. Again, we have Matt Mulloway scheduled to be on the show next week, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully we can get him on and give us a little preview of the state of the word, and may mention Gutenberg once or twice during that episode, I bet.
It is the week before WordCamp US and all through the podcast.
Yes, right? But we'll save the poem for next month. What's the night before Gutenberg? I'm actually looking forward to that. So you can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. You got anything to say?
I don't think I want to read that that poem with Matt on the line with us. I feel like it's a long read.
Yeah, next week it's just going to be all questions. I mean, we're going to start off with fastballs, right down the middle. No softballs next week. Just kidding. Just raising the hype up there. And it's going to be a great show. We got so much to catch up with him about and some things to talk about. John, where can we find you at?
GitHub and Twitter at JJJ or JJJ.blog.
For those who celebrate it, have a happy and wonderful and filling Thanksgiving. Stay safe out there. If you are going to participate in the Black Friday extravaganza, I'm going to wait around for Cyber Monday, because it's a lot easier to do. But we'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody. Say bye, John.
Gobble, gobble.